following the venues or the promoters and the festivals that you like, interacting with them. Mm-hmm. To this day, I'm still very active. Both of us are still active, like in our social channels for our different businesses. And I see the recurring people. Yeah. Like, I know the people that interact with us. I'll go check out their profile, see what they're about. Cause I'm also always looking for like, who has a skill set that might contribute to our organization. So for I've always kept my eye open, and it's also a networking thing. Like,
hey guys, welcome back to Rave Culture Cast, your weekly guide to the EDM community, music festivals, and more. I am your host, Emma Kapotis. Happy Wednesday, friends. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode. We've got an incredible interview lined up for you guys. If you are some house and techno fans or just rave culture fans in general, I think you're going to really love this one. But before we dive in, I want to give a quick shout out to one of our friends of the podcast, Lunatics. I got some goodies in here. It's a little show and tell moment. So if you're not watching on Spotify or YouTube, definitely check us out over there. We got some Lunatics goodies. We got some face gems. Their face gems are my absolute favorite. I love these. They're always coming out with like new designs that are very unique and cute, and it's a small business, which is amazing to support. So this one was like all pink themed, and then look at these like little butterfly stickers, body stickers, so cute, little gems. I've got some like glitter, some pink glitter, some red. They're galactic glue, which keeps everything on. So we absolutely love Lunatics. Like, literally all my hair accessories, face gems, glitter is all Lunatics. So you guys can save with code EMMAK to get 10% off your orders. I will link all that down below. Stock up for festival season, get all your goodies, and enjoy. And with that being said, you guys, one quick thing I want to mention is my EDC Las Vegas meetup. So if you guys didn't tune in last week, I'm doing my first ever meetup outside of the festival. It's Friday at 11 a.m. At the Lux pop-up shop inside the Luxor. This is a huge like iHeartRaves pop-up shop that's been there like every year. I used to always go when I was staying on the strip, but you can buy like last minute outfits, accessories, any like rave items that you need. So yeah, they invited me to do like a little meet and greet at the Lux pop-up shop Friday at 11 a.m. So please come say hi, trade candy, let's hang out. It'll be really nice because it's not as like rushed and it's quieter and we can actually hear each other rather than the chaos of EDC. So yeah, I hope to see you guys there. That's the only like official like Emma meetup that I'm doing. I am going to be hosting one for Beatbox Beverages inside as well that we are going to be announcing. So that is going to be Saturday at 9 p.m. at our Beatbus activation. That is for our, you know, our Beatbox fam. I'm wearing my Beatbox baseball jersey today, which is so cute. So yeah, I'm attending on behalf of Beatbox this year. Going to be running around. We have so many crazy things. This is our biggest festival of the year. Obviously, we're sponsoring the festival, and I'm also going to be doing some stuff with Insomniac Radio this year again, which is so exciting. So I'm like twirling my fingers. Lots of things have been in store and in the works that I'm pumped for. But anyways, just wanted to shout that out. So I hope to see you guys there next weekend at one of those two meetups. And with that all out of the way, I want to introduce today's guest who I'm honored to have on the podcast. Today we have Andrew Parsons and Kelly Gray, who are the founders of Seismic Dance Event, which is a boutique house and techno festival based in Austin, Texas. I do have to shout out my girl Vibe with Aid because I was introduced to Seismic through her content. She lives in Austin and has been going for years, and I always watched her vlogs and heard her talk about it, and she absolutely loved it. Same with the Concourse Project. So shout out Aid for kind of introducing me to them. But I've just kind of sat back and watched this festival grow over the years and build this incredible, you know, fan base of dance music lovers in Austin. And they have expertly curated lineups of international talent that's been amazing to see in the States. So Seismic is going on 6 years. They have both their spring edition, which is happening this weekend, May 10th and 11th, the Spring Light. And then they have their main edition, which is always in the fall. So Seismic 7.0 is November 15th through the 17th. So they've got both things going on. Kelly and Andrew are also co-owners of the Concourse Project, which I got to go to my first show at the Concourse this earlier in the year. And it was amazing. It was just really, really cool vibes, like a nice intimate setting, but still like felt like a big warehouse venue. So it's really, really cool what they're doing there. And I know that's a local favorite that people attend a ton of events there. So it's just really remarkable to see the growth of the scene there and how these two are working hand in hand to really curate that experience for fans and, you know, fuel that fire there. So I'm so excited to have Andrew and Kelly on as guests this week to just talk about their story, talk about how they're keeping rave culture alive in Austin, Texas, and what is up next for Seismic Dance Event. So with all that being said, please join us in welcoming Andrew and Kelly to the podcast.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Alex with the Rave Culture Cast, and I'm here with Kelly and Andrew, the owners of Real Music Events and Seismic Dance Event. How are you guys doing today?
Good. Looking forward to chatting.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for taking the time out to talk to us. I want to start this by saying I was at Seismic in November for the first time ever, and it was absolutely fabulous. It feels like a community.
Yes.
Which is super unique in the festival world because people just keep going bigger and bigger and bigger. And while that's fun, it's great to be at a massive event with like tens of thousands of people. There's also something lost in that where you feel a disconnect from the artists. You feel a disconnect from the dance floor if you're the artist. And you feel a disconnect from the community at large because you tend to stick to your own group. And I feel like with a smaller event or a more boutique event, you have the opportunity to really become a part of the event again. It kind of reminded me of the events that I went to when I first started going to parties, like in the late 90s. So kudos for that.
Thanks.
For sure.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. I can see that. Well, I'm going to skip around because I said that. Yeah. But on that note, how I know you've talked about like expanding further, but how do you hold that balance between staying authentic and keeping that community feel and like further expanding and maybe adding more, you know, people to the capacity?
Yeah, something we actually like have conversations about. And, you know, if we go to another festival, it helps kind of solidify our perspective on things. Cause exactly like to your point, when we've gone to some of the bigger, like gigantic festivals, we often feel the same way. And like, either you might feel like I feel like I'm spending less of my time digesting music and getting into it and more time navigating from one place to the other. Yes. Or like it's so big and expansive that you're so far away and maybe there's sound clash, or even if there isn't, it's like the energy is diluted. Mm. So like for the Concourse project, like we along with our partner David, that's something that we also talked about with our venue and like for just our normal shows as well as for our festival Seismic. Like ways to like keep energy and just like the right size, and like you'll do things with like infrastructure or your perimeter to make sure like you're not creating too vast a space where you kind of kill that energy,
right?
Or even like ceiling heights or production, like all of that comes into play to like maintain a good density of energy, because when it gets too spread out, it really does impact things. And we've even had a conversation with like a headliner when they've come to a show and they really appreciate just the size that we have, because they agree, like when they play, let's say the main stage at a huge festival, they just feel so disconnected because they're so far away. And even, like, for us, even at the size that we do play with, sometimes we get concerned about the disconnect, even just having a stage and then there's the barricade and the people are. So that's something that we're always consciously thinking through, whether it's the festival or our regular events. It really is fundamental to like providing the right like vibe and energy.
I love that that's something you think about. You know, I've talked to headlining DJs, and one of my questions, I used to do speedrun interviews, and one of my questions was, which do you prefer more, a small venue or a large festival? And people have trouble picking because at the large festival, they get to play in front of 10,000 people, but at a small venue, they actually feel like they're close to the people and they can actually maintain, they get the energy of the people better that way. Like their sets are innately different in that more intimate environment, maybe a little bit more, they may take more chances in that intimate environment.
It's really true. We used to say the exact same thing before we had this venue and we were partners of another that was much smaller. We always said the same thing, like you just get a different experience when it's more intimate. So when we translate knowing that to like our festival, one of the reasons we wanted to keep it boutique is to like moderate how many people are there. Cause once it gets too big, the cool thing is you can have bigger and crazier production, which is always nice.
Right.
But what we're doing is playing with like being able to get bigger and bigger and really have dope production, but like not too many people, where it still feels like a good amount. You still get the benefits of like that big collective energy, but it's not like too much where everyone's like pushed out so far away, binoculars, you know, just kidding. Yeah, from like, again, like for Seismic, once you get past even like the 10,000 capacity number, you really start to loot things, but it's dependent on like how many stages you have,
right?
How your terrain is, how big those stages are, and like the dance floor area. So we're under 10K for our festival. And like, that's partly been because we're growing, but also partly because we want to maintain that like intimate vibe, but still at like festival production caliber.
Yeah.
But once you get past like the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 100,000 people a day, it's like, it's not something that we're that interested in, at least yet.
For sure, for sure. Well, I love that there's people out there that are continuing to kind of be mindful of that dance, of the connection to the dance floor for everybody. I'm going to kind of rewind a little bit. And I know you guys have like a really extensive history in dance music. I kind of want to know how you guys fell in love with dance music, but also what led you to move from the dance floor to producing events.
You want to go first?
Yeah. So, I mean, I started going to events and everything pretty young. My brother actually introduced me to raves and parties when I was like 13. So I went to my first like rave in 2000 in Houston. And that was kind of like, you know, that was it for me. So from that point on, I pretty much like, you know, was always trying to go to events. I started DJing at like 14. And really started, you know, going to a lot of events, especially once I got my own car. My brother didn't have to come pick me up in Tampa or something, you know. And then I was able to drive to Dallas or Houston. I lived in Waco at the time. So, I mean, Waco's basically right in between Dallas and Houston. I mean, it's Dallas, yeah. Dallas and Austin. So, like, you could go to both pretty easily, which is nice. So I was every weekend, I was pretty much going to some party somewhere, you know. And that's kind of how I first started getting into it, and then started DJing and then started playing parties when I was, you know, 14, 15, too, and then started a record label when I was still in high school, and wow. Then started even throwing little parties when I was still in high school, too. So I've been doing it for quite a while, obviously not the same scale that we are now, but I definitely started pretty young. I guess
some of the origins of like the EDC brand actually took place in Texas. We actually were just this weekend saw Noah, I guess, would you call him like the creator, the producer of those ones?
Yeah, Noah Ark.
From Ark Entertainment. And yeah. So they were massive with like 10,000 people back in the day, which is still boggles my mind how they could get that many.
It was 25,000.
Yeah, even that, like that's huge, especially that for huge. That long ago. Yeah. So Andrew DJed some of those, and we had a full circle moment because we saw him it was the first time I met him. Yeah. I just heard of that because that's right before I got into the scene. And that was his beginnings, like his first gigs and all of that. So we saw him this weekend at the Concourse Project. And it was really cool catching up. And it's a full circle thing. But yeah, it was Electric Daisy Carnival before it was Insomniacs.
Yeah.
So it was a little piece of Texas history that we used to have those masses. They kind of stopped. Yeah. And then it was like about club shows. And then those started getting bigger. And now we're doing club shows and festivals again.
Yeah.
Nice.
I guess for me, I started in 2005 in terms of being in the scene, and it's a similar thing. Like I feel like a lot of people, there's their first event, and that kind of opens the door to everything else. So I moved to Austin in 2005 to go to UT. So I was a freshman, and like Halloween, I went to a Halloween event, and it was like culture shock because it was like a dance music kind of like rave in the forest, and it was called they were these cool forest parties, and I was just so intrigued that when I went home, I just like try to just immerse myself and find as much like electronic dance music as possible. And there was definitely like the predecessors along the way in my life where I liked albums or things that had electronic components, but I didn't really realize there was a whole scene dedicated to it.
Right.
After that, it was like game over. And at the time, Austin's scene was small enough where there would be like one specific event, like on the weekend, like on Friday or Saturday, and everyone, regardless of the genre, would go to that particular event. And so we came to know each other and we're friends and ran in the same similar circles because it was the people that were dedicated to the scene here, right. And you would see everyone at the same shows, and it was very community driven, which, you know, leads us to where we are today. But then I started, like, I was really interested in dancing and like self-expression and getting like all dressed up and doing cool looks. So I started channeling that, and I started my like dance group, which is still current today. And started performing at a lot of those shows. And I mean, this story just, there's so many details, but we eventually got together in like 08, and then we started doing our own events in 09. So it pivoted from his record label, which was Real Music Recordings. Then we did Real Music Events.
Right.
And we just didn't stop. The only time we stopped was like when COVID hit, and it was the break that we got after so many years.
Which is nice.
But yeah, and so it's all led to throwing shows at other people's venues, being partners of a former venue. And when that closed, we were looking for like what would be our next home for not only like our club shows, but our festival too, because we were also a new home for our festival. And that's what led us to the Concourse Project and the Home for Seismic and our shows and all of that.
Yeah.
You just kind of like explained every like rave lifer's like journey. And like all of the people, all of us who decide to like make a life out of this or make a living out of this, there's something a little wrong with us, because we're like, okay, how do we make this happen?
I always say that, too. I'm like,
All the things we can do to contribute.
Right. But I think it's really interesting that you talked about, like, you guys both continue to find ways to contribute to this in any way possible, be it DJing or fashion or, like, starting a dance crew. What would you say to somebody who's, like, looking to find their way onto the other side of the dance floor right now?
I mean, I definitely think, you know, things are so different now from when I first started, but I definitely think like when I first got started, it was, I started promoting like flyering and stuff, which obviously isn't a huge thing now. I mean, it's mostly social media stuff, right? But I definitely
promoting through social media. Is
yeah. Like promoting and just like showing face, right? Like I think showing up and supporting the venue or whatever that you're
the promoter
of the festival, whatever, and reaching out, but then also like, you know, sending your stuff, especially if you're trying to DJ, send your mixes and whatever, but just like showing face, but also like keeping up, like, cause I mean, we get super busy. Right. And then I don't check my messages a bunch of times, or I even have my messages off on like
Facebook.
Apologies
in advance, everyone. Yeah.
So like, you know, just following up again so that you're top of mind sometimes, just checking in and like, you know, it's, I think that's super smart, and just getting yourself out there and just being, just showing up and being a part of what's happening.
It was the same for me. So I started just because I was so passionate about it that like I would promote online and took pride in, like, I felt like I'm promoting these shows really well and making people really interested in it. And like, you don't want to miss it. And so I really had that mindset of helping to promote the events. Like I would also help flyer sometimes, and just like doing everything I could to kind of like put it on a pedestal, you know, like from the mountaintops, this is really dope. And like you said, like doing that, just finding ways you can do to help support what might be the existing scene or like existing promoters who's like shows you like or appreciate, and then interacting with them. So things are, back in the day, we would hand out flyers after shows physically, flyer cars. And then there was also like the MySpace digital side of things. And now it's like, there's still the digital social side of thing, which is the more prominent place to focus, and utilizing those resources, like following the venues or the promoters and the festivals that you like, interacting with them. To this day, I'm still very both of us are still active like in our social channels for our different businesses. And I see the recurring people. Yeah. Like I know the people that interact with us. I'll go check out their profile, see what they're about. Cause I'm also always looking for like, who has a skill set that might contribute to our organization. So I've always kept my eye open, and it's also a networking thing. Like since back in the day, I would go follow like photographers or other dancers, dance groups, promoters, all like the DJs. That's also how I did music discovery, you know, like, go find all of the different artists and all of that, and just like keep up and do what you can to just be a sponge.
Yeah.
And then while you do that, you will also start to find like what your calling might be. Like what it, what particularly like gives you that spark? Is it dancing? Is it shuffling? Is it DJing? Is it like music curation? Is it like knowing a vibe and helping with events? Like there's volunteer shifts you can get to go to events if you want to do that. You don't have to pay to go to the event. You can volunteer, and it gets your foot in the door to just start seeing how things operate. And it doesn't even matter where you do that. Like so many people that we work with started in some position, and because of their like work ethic and like passion, they worked through the organization in different ways, and you start finding their skill sets and matching them to your opportunities. And that's just what I recommend to everybody is put out like your face, you know, go support the people that are providing stuff and interact with them. And even if you don't hear anything, just keep interacting or follow up or find where your spot might be. Even if it's like just getting your foot in the door with like simple things, you know, that's where it all starts.
Yeah. I mean, everything for me goes back to like passing out flyers in front of clubs and raves. Exactly. So, you know, just even a small act of helping somebody out, you have no idea who you're going to be putting yourself in front of or how much people really actually even appreciate the fact that you want to do something. Because people think that, you know, throwing events, you have like a staff to do all this stuff, but there's always something that needs to be done.
Sure.
And you never know where your skill set is going to be needed.
Yeah. There's so many like little pieces to all the things that you don't even think about. There's so many moving parts. Like,
yeah, crazy. It's endless. Yeah. And there's always areas of need within an organization. Yeah. And it's fun to match that to the people that are passionate about things. And those are the best people for it, because you don't just find old Joe off the street who might know something about social media or something. It just doesn't apply here because it's not authentic unless they actually like care and know about the music and have an affinity for it. It doesn't work otherwise.
Yeah.
100%. Deciding to throw your own money into throwing an event is painful. It's painful. I'm just going to come out and say it. It's painful. I've done it before. I get it. It's painful. And like the larger you go, the more you do it. That pain doesn't go away. Was there a sign ultimately at the beginning of you guys deciding to start throwing your own shows that it was the right decision to take that kind of risk? And how do you, just like the two of you decide, like you guys wake up every day and decide to be a couple. You have to wake up every day and decide that you're going to keep doing this thing that is both immensely gratifying and also really challenging.
Yeah.
How did you make that decision initially, and how do you keep making that decision every day?
I feel like it's persevering is like such a crucial part of like who we are and our business and all of that. But it's like our destiny. Like I feel like knowing your path and knowing what's next is really important to me, and it's something I'm always thinking about. Like I'll be on the couch, like just like thinking of ways to expand the empire and solutions and stuff. It's my pastime. But I think when we all gravitated to this scene, it's like it felt right. Yeah. Right. And so like that's just all of our ideas and our passion and our excitement contribute towards this path, and we get to be aligned on that and do it together.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's just about keeping going because we just have faith in it. But I guess at a certain point you got to be like smart enough to know if it's gonna be the right path or not. And I mean, it was so many years of losses. Yeah. So here's
been the hard road.
Here's how it worked out for us. We both had our like separate jobs.
Right.
And so it was like a passion thing. And we started out with like a couple shows a month, and then then became like a weekly thing, and then a multiple shows a week thing. And you just kind of gradually step into more. And as we started to like book more expensive DJs and all that, the shows were doing better, and you're able, you know, like how much crowd size you can pull. And he's actually really great at that. He's the talent buyer. So he can gauge like this artist, he's really like on top of like artists and different music and what kind of crowd size that they can probably pull. And so right. you just kind of build from that and know what you're working with. But like for us, it was just kind of a passion thing. And so we knew it was going to take a lot of years to like grow to something that was more like financially sustainable. And so, I mean, it was just like, it's a moving thing. Like you lose some money here, you make some money, you lose, and you just do that constantly. And so we weren't living off of that. That's what our other jobs are for.
Right.
Eventually, like, those other jobs were able to help fund our bigger projects. Like once we started doing the bigger events and like the festival and all of that. And the festivals lose money. Those are very expensive, very small things to do. There's a lot of risk. So some may think that we're crazy, but I don't know. We just know what we're doing. Like we know what path we're on, and we know, like, the more you do something, the more you can fine tune it. And then the closer you get to the numbers, and just in the beginning, it's more of like, just throwing a dart in the dark, you know, and then as you keep doing it, you just build upon that, you hone in on things. So things are finally getting to a place where it's like, here we are, you know, after a lot of like time.
And we definitely didn't go into it like she said, we weren't going into it like, let's try to make a bunch of money. That was never the thing, right? So I think that's one of the good things for us is like, we're doing this because we care about music and we our intentions are right. And so I think that's an important thing. Because we didn't just do this just to make money, but you know, it's like, it's taken a very long time to get where we are. It's definitely been a struggle. I mean, there's been a lot of times where we're like, we thought we were done, you know, like, I guess this is it, you know? And it's rough. It's definitely a hard thing. And like you said, you wake up every day and decide you're going to do this thing. And it is extremely stressful. But it's also very rewarding too. And you know, I wouldn't have it any other way, I guess. So
It's very rewarding. And it's been our full-time job for quite some time now. So even getting to the part where like I used to work for Google was my last job before this. And then I left that to focus fully when we were ready to open the venue and the festival was just growing. So I couldn't like divide myself anymore. And now it's like, we work well beyond full time. Yeah. It's like,
of course,
days a week, you know, and just constant.
Full.
Like we wouldn't be able to do what we do if we weren't partners, because we get to, like, we're talking about things that we're going to do even in the nighttime and this and that. It's just constant, but it's just where our mindset is. But to be able to start having full-time employees and more of them and so many like part-time employees and be able to give more people opportunities. Like we didn't have that. We had to build it ourselves, you know, and even when we had it, it wasn't enough to satisfy our needs. And now that we're getting bigger to help satisfy others, like it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And I definitely think like, you know, it's been very helpful that both of us have the same goal and the same drive, you know, obviously like being in a relationship with someone who doesn't want to continue on, but we both, the whole time we've been like, you know, we both are like, let's go, you know? So that's obviously a
And whenever a major he'd part get down and glum after like, let's say there was like a loss or some like trials and tribulations we have to go through. Cause there have been many of those. I'm always like, we'll figure it out. We'll always get past it. And we always do. So
I feel like it sounds to me like it's a net benefit for you guys being in a relationship and also running this company together. One, because it sounds like you balance each other out pretty well. Mm-hmm. But also for what you just said, because when somebody's feeling low about this or feeling like this is the end, the other person could be like, you know, let's pick ourselves up and move on.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
From the beginning, you guys have always taken a left of center approach to booking talent, which is really cool. How do you balance staying ahead of the curve while booking talent that also makes fiscal sense?
Yeah, I mean, it's rough. That's definitely like one of the things like that's taken years to figure out, because a lot of times, especially when we first started, we were too ahead of the curve. And it was like, you know, we were getting these acts and then they were blowing up maybe a year later or something. So we kept missing like the good strides. It's like, okay, we got to start. So I started like just kind of holding on to things a little bit more. I do think that things are different now. I mean,
music
has gotten so big. Right. So, you know, it's like a fine line of like picking out the things that we know are going to move some tickets that people like. And then also bringing in the new artists, and trying new things, you know, so it's, especially with a room as large as ours, you know, I really like new artists and try to bring them up and stuff. And so It's a little bit harder to do in a room our size, but at least it's like, you know, trying to bring these guys in for support acts or trying to pair them with other acts. And I really pay attention a lot to music just because I'm a DJ first, essentially. So definitely a lot of stuff is like what I'm liking and what I'm listening to, and like, you know, check out a lot of stuff. So I try to keep abreast of what is kind of going on, you know, with new music and stuff. And so, yeah, it's been interesting with the new venue, but it's definitely, you know, a lot of listening to stuff and DJing and liking the artist, and then just kind of following them and seeing where they're at, and then, you know, giving things a chance sometimes, you know, it's a lot of chance too.
It's really hard to find that balance, but also it feels like you guys are doing a great job of educating your audience while also giving them exactly what they want.
Yeah.
And it seems like, well, when I was at Seismic, that's your audience already seems pretty educated.
Yes.
which is highly unique in a major city. Because you generally have like a very small subset of the community that's gonna get excited about somebody like Pasa over somebody like Deadmau5. Yeah. And do you think that that's a factor of your crowd specifically, or do you think that's a factor of Austin, or do you think that's a factor of like where dance music is at currently? I just gave you three options.
Pick. Yeah, I think it's a little bit of all of them. I do think that we've been educating the scene here in Austin for so many years, and I think there are certain acts that are underground acts that will sell better for us than they would in Dallas or Houston, but those are obviously much bigger cities, you know?
Right.
So I think it's because we've been educating the scene here for so long and kind of getting people into that, but then also I think, you know, the crowd here is really awesome, and I think it's just kind of, you know, became a thing.
Yeah.
But then also the scene now, definitely like a Pasa, that is like, you know, I think people are kind of coming into it now, listening to that kind of stuff.
Right.
Nice. But it's definitely like, I think what we've done is a little different than other.
Yeah. It's like a little snowball, like our little concoction of like, you know, stemming from our musical tastes and like the artists that we bring. But one thing that is good about what we do is we're not, some people may say that we're too much just house and techno or whatever, but then like others would say you're not underground enough, because we actually do like spread things out. Like we used to have trance stuff and like the occasional bass show, and we have drum and bass and all that. So we actually do span across a lot more of the genres within like the dance music realm than like others may do in other markets. Like they focus on this or this, you know,
and right.
Because we do that, like it casts a wider net. But there is the bread, like the focal point, you know, like the sweet spot. And we continue to build on that and like continue to bring more artists like that, or they bring them back and they get bigger and bigger over time. So it's like cultivating a certain sound and taste. And then the community, because it is so like community rich, like they just stay along with you over the years, and then their friends get involved and all that. And so it's definitely been something that's built over time. Otherwise, like the central of the US is otherwise more bass predominant.
Yeah, it is
too. Yeah. And all of the other like markets here and like the festivals, they've always skewed much more bass heavy. And so one of the reasons why we started doing shows way back when was just to bring different styles of dance music. And so that's continued to grow, and having like a really authentic vibe and culture and like a lifestyle associated with it, it's just continued to like grow. And that's why we're able to do something like Seismic and it to feel like the crowd is very educated. And one thing that we actually joke about, I don't know if we joke about it, but there have been some artists that have come over time and like we may have been excited about it and thought like we're gonna have a good show, and like maybe they play kind of cheesy, and like my hypothesis is that they're like underestimating the crowd here because it's Texas.
Yeah.
Then like all of the heads here are like, I am not impressed because X, Y, and Z, you know, and like, are you going to play with us and play some like corny stuff? Like maybe like as if they think it's more of like a frat or a frat kind of party thing. And it doesn't happen that often. But sometimes if the people just aren't reading the crowd or paying attention, like they just give what they think that we are. And it really shows.
Yeah, I definitely think Austin, it's not like, I mean, we've kind of put Austin on the map, I will say. I mean, but I think when you think of like major markets of dance music, I mean, you definitely don't think about Austin, but I think it's getting there. And I think it's just, we put in a lot of work there. And I think, you know, it's definitely been coming up, you know what I mean? Like it's, you can feel it, you know?
Well, I'm definitely seeing more major acts roll through Austin now than ever before.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say, that's got to be a big factor as you guys, but not just you guys, but also the venue. Yeah. The Concourse Project is, dare I say, very European. It's, I don't know. I don't know how to say it any better. Like the modular lighting style.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. The way it's lit. The fact that you guys are being recognized by DJ Mag consistently says something about the fact that you're doing something very different there. What was the impetus to deciding to open your own venue? Because that's, again, that's just another one of those risks where it's just like, this could be really painful, but it could also be like a bright, shining spot in the North American dance music scene. Like, yeah. And you don't even know, you don't even have the foresight to know that it was going to become a mecca of house and techno and dance music a few years down the line. You had no idea that was going to happen. So why?
It's just that gradual evolution of like, okay, I've done this and what you're ready for is the next thing. And so since we would do our shows at other people's venues, we were always like bringing in extra like lighting or this and that equipment, like making it better. And that's like our motto here. And then when we were partners of like a smaller like club, we entered like did the bookings and all that. So it was mostly our shows and got a taste for that. Like, and you just kind of build on that. So when it closed, cause like real estate acquisition shit, Austin drama. Right. We were using other venues in the meantime and then like looking for like, where's our spot going to be? And the Concourse Project is like the foray outside of downtown. So, downtown like spaces, like they're going to be much smaller and all of that. And we'd looked into some options and we're like, we're not going to find anything that makes more sense. And eventually we found the Concourse Project, because we were also looking for a new venue for our festival for Seismic. And we had done it at this Austin American Statesman, but that's going away soon. And it was just kind of weird circumstances downtown. And like the whole premise of Seismic is to have like an indoor, like a volcano thing with like cool production overhead and then an outdoor space. And so a former like music industry colleague of ours had a venue that's actually next door to the Concourse Project. Always been Latin based, and he wanted us to come out and see his spot. So we did that. But then we saw this like warehouse next door that was new construction, not complete. And I was asking him about that. And he's like, oh, you wouldn't be interested. It's just a blank warehouse, no plumbing or anything. I'm like, can you give us like the property owner's like info? And so we pushed and like went and saw it. And we're like, this would be perfect for like the volcano stage. And so then we just started strategizing like what that would look like. And that was like end of 2019, beginning of 2020. And then we brought in our partner, David, because he was interested in doing another project. And we started working through like options to not only be able to do our festival there, but to have like all of our shows. And so there's actually a modular floor plan. Like we can create more condensed floor plans. Sorry. So yeah, we were looking for the next solution for like our shows as well as our festival, and the Concourse Project ended up being the solution to both. And so that's how we ended up being here.
That's so cool. It's so cool also that it's like, it was like a new space because so many venues are just repurposing old space and it feels like an old space inside, but it's not. So kudos to you for finding something really cool. And I want to talk about how you guys are preserving dance music culture, specifically with having dancers on stage, and not just go-go dancers, but like shufflers, and also having like dance spaces for dance circles in the outdoor area.
Yeah.
Like these are things that I haven't seen at a festival, I want to say, since like the early 2000s. Nice. Like I have not seen I haven't seen a proper dance circle at a festival, and I can't remember how long.
We have a pretty big dance community here beyond just music, but the actual like dancing.
It's really amazing because so much, I feel like people talk so much about dance music being a phone culture now, people standing, staring at the DJ, but I didn't see that. I saw people actually dancing.
Yeah.
Why is it so important that you guys like make space for that? Besides the fact that you were a dancer.
Yeah. I mean, it stems from that for sure. And I mean, we're all things like passion and creativity, and like, we're passionate about also providing that platform for other people. Yeah. And so it does stem from like me being a dancer and having my dance team and being the performers that are at the shows and the festival. And I know that feeling that it provides. And I feel that feeling watching others too. Yeah. And so we've always had really impressive, just like dancers on the dance floor here. And something that like that we're proud of to have in Austin, as well as like Texas overall. And so it's just kind of like that community thing. And like, they're all connected. And it's just, if you talk to like the shufflers, you know, obviously shuffling is huge, but they will, like the ones here will say there's something very special about the shuffle community. And like Texas, it's, there's just a really thick bond and kind of culture to it. Yeah. And so having the dancers at the shows has been something that we've done, and just kind of pivoted from that, like wanting to give others the opportunity and like shining a light on that and just getting the dance community involved, because it's fun and it's impressive. And it's like, I've always known like others that like can do really cool, like, I don't know, pop knock, I do this and that, like all kinds of different like dancing and liquid and that, you know, and I love it. And so I want to showcase that. And I want people to do that more because it's fun and it's part of the experience. That was my early experiences of the scene. And so it's just continuing that part of the culture, which is a really fundamental part. That's how people connect with the music.
Yeah.
But there is etiquette to it. And that's something I try to be vocal about and try to shed a light on, like the ways to have etiquette about dancing at shows and not having like the flashlight in people's faces, because people want to watch the production too. So it's not only about you, you know? So when people are turned and like show it like flashing flashlights, and it's like distracting for others. So there's ways to do it without like affecting others' experience if they're not paying attention to that, you know? So, but yeah, it's a really special part of the whole thing. And I've gotten like chills and maybe even a little tear or something watching the crowd dance on the, like the dance platform that we've put out in the crowd, and like watching some of like our content afterwards, and you can just like see and feel their passion, and it's a really cool feeling.
Yeah. I think it's just nice. It kind of goes back to like, we're talking about with just the community and stuff. It's just another way to get the community involved in things. And I think that's something that in a perfect world, I wish I had a million slots that I could put all the locals on. And I wish we had a million areas where we could have all the artists painting. And, you know, I just feel like there's so many great artists out there, especially in Austin. And, you know, we love to shine a light on all these people and try to give them a platform when we can. And so it's just nice community building kind of stuff. It's really cool. You know, it's a good vibe. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's such a big part of the rave, like pivotal part of rave culture to have all of these elements. Like art has always been part of it. And dancing has always been part of it. And DJing has always been part of it. And people who are musicians, like all of these things have always been like facets. And I just love seeing that you guys are paying attention to all of those things individually and not just putting on a production that's flashy lights and big sound, which is fantastic.
Production, though.
I do love flashy lights and big sound. Yeah. But there's like, I love the fact that you like think leagues deeper than that.
Yeah.
Like even down to like your merch designs. That reversible sweatshirt this year. Yeah. How, like, why you guys could just do screen print like shit and that would be fine, because that's what everybody else does. Why is it so important that, like,
because it's that style?
Yeah.
It's just, there's so many different like creative outlets, and you know, it started with like dancing and like doing stuff with like that side of things, and the costume design and all of that. And I am a designer. Right. And so I have less time to be physically sewing like my dancers' outfits. I used to do like a new outfit for every show. And now I have some team members that like help assist. So I'm like, here, help do this and like pass it down the line. But I reuse more of my costumes now than I used to, because I just don't have time with all of the other operations and stuff for our shows. But I repurpose my creativity in new ways. So like, there's the production side of things and working with our production manager and the production team on that. That's something that's really exciting. So like, my inspo saves changed from used to be about like so much more like dance wear, and now I'm saving lighting looks and stuff all the time. But then there's also merch, like street wear. So that's like, beyond just like outfitting my dancers, I like applying the clothing to everybody else and like guys and all of that, and creating like the feeling of swagger for everyone. And a lot of like event merch can be like pretty straightforward and meh, you know, and
just kind of throwaway gear.
And,
you know,
I've said this before, but like I've seen like a lot of like guys, like they'll get some merch at an event and then that's some of their like staple clothes. And I'm like, well, let's make that a little bit cooler, you know? And so it's just building on it. Cause even if I look at the stuff back in the day that I would do, like when I'm learning the merch game and the different techniques, it's like, I don't even want to look at a lot of older things, you know, but it's just making things cooler and cooler and cooler and being really abreast of like trends and streetwear and all of that. And even just noticing like where the placement is on things and where it's flattering or not. Like that's something I've always
been
really mindful of for when I was outfitting my dancers or not. Like just like, is this patch on your back this high going to be cool or is that weird? Like should be lower and like getting like down to like the inches and centimeters.
Yeah, sometimes she's doing it on me. She's like, oh, come here. I'm like, oh.
I'm like, still, like measuring his back and all that. So that's a creative outlet for me. And
we both really like fashion a lot, too. Yes. I mean, it's just like another like nice piece. And I think it's one of the coolest things ever. I like love everything that she puts out. I mean, she's crushing that stuff. And it's just so awesome. Like even me, like most of the stuff that I'm wearing is stuff that she's making. I mean, like at the end of the day, like I just love a lot of stuff that she's putting together.
Obviously, and like I'll collaborate with like a graphic designer and like, here, let's do this or whatever. Or like there's different people that we collaborate with. It's really cool. And then like at Sizeik, I'm sure you saw a lot of people are walking around and like they're black and gold or they're whatever, black and white or whatever, like seismic gear that we're wearing. It's that whole like black on black lifestyle. But you just see all those like seismic pops everywhere. It's just really cool. And that's a whole nother part of the vibe and the culture as well.
Yeah. I love it. I want to talk about your staff, which seems to be more like your family.
Yes.
You have a really close-knit relationship with the people that you work with, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, you could just hire people, just random people that are qualified for the jobs, or you could hire friends that are also good at the job and who you'll feel like a close kinship with. Mm-hmm. Why is that so foundational to like the way you guys do community building?
I would say a lot of them become your family after working together, or it's kind of like happens at the same time, and you find more opportunities for those that you love, but it's not like we're just like, hey, you're my friend, go do this. It's a natural kind of evolution with those mm-hmm. bonds relationship. And I don't know, I was just talking about this on site earlier before this, but it just doesn't work out with a lot of people if they're not like all about it and passionate mm-hmm. about it. So it really stems from passion, like having, being like-minded about what your passions are and what you care about and the music and all of that. And so then you have like a core and you're aligned and you keep growing what you're doing and the vision together. And then it starts stemming off and then they bring in some team members or like you find someone that works for their team and then like they're the right fit because they really care about it. And when many of us have worked like other events or like other with other companies or do this and do that, and like it's just different. And like I don't know, we are all very proud of the like the team culture that we have developed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it really does stick out like a sore thumb when like someone isn't the right fit, because it comes down to like mindset, work ethic, gratitude, just being passionate about what you're doing. And if you don't, like having humor and being laid back but still like serious when it comes down to the work grind, and it's not easy.
No.
You know, you have to dedicate your like life to it, because a lot of people like on their weekends it's their time off, they get to go do this and that, and like most of us are like shows.
Right.
So it's a lot. It's grueling in many ways, no matter what department you're in. But it's also like, it really is a family. Like these are the people that you want to be with and you see eye to eye with. And it's really important to like create that magic kind of element in that whole atmosphere.
I love to hear that. I want to talk about authenticity for a second, because that's something that you guys keep coming back to. And it's something that like jumped up on my mind. It was in front of mind before I was supposed to talk to you guys yesterday, because I saw some other unnamed festival announcements that seemed strange, like bizarre. And as things like grow larger, they often grow more corporatized.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and the original tenets of the rave scene was kind of anti that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I want to talk, like, I want to understand, how do you guys maintain your authenticity in a world that where dance music is now pop music and rave culture is just pop culture now? Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. this is different than it was 20 years ago when we all started doing this. It's immeasurably different. So how do you guys maintain that authenticity?
I think it comes down to like every facet of the business, including like the staff and every, like the people that are putting on the event, because our crowd will make comment about how great the staff is. And yeah. that really sets the tone for like how people operate and act. Cause it can feel very different. Like at shows at like the Concourse Project or at Seismic versus like if you go to other places, in the country, in the world, whatever.
Yeah.
So you really set that precedent with having the right people being a part of it. But then, yeah, like just us, it's authentic because it's music we care about.
Yeah.
We're booking artists that we care about. I mean, sure, not everyone is our favorite. We do sprinkle in some other things for other people, and it doesn't mean we're at every single show, but like for the most part, everything that we book are things that we authentically like care about a lot and really want to bring and experience.
And we listen to people too, like especially when it comes to shows, like because we're, you know, part of our social media all the time, I actually am paying attention. People are like, I want to see this person. I want to see it. Like, I literally have notes and I keep track of all that stuff. Like, I mean, people hit me all the time. Like, did you see that I asked for this person? Now you're bringing them. I'm like, yeah, I did. Like, I actually do pay attention.
Or it's usually like, I was already going to bring them.
Yeah. But I'm saying like, I pay attention enough though, you know, like I do care what people want to see because they're part of what we're doing. Like I actually, I'm not just booking stuff to book it, you know?
And that's the other next, the big part I was going to say is just how involved we still are in things.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of other companies, like, they become detached from it and they're just producing their events or their teams are, but like, we're just so passionate about it. We're still so involved from like our business operations and our teams to like the community. And so like, while we have a marketing team, it's actually very small. There's like one other team member that's like working on the accounts. And then in addition to us, like we're still jumping in there. Like I'll still be in the DMs sometimes, or I'll be posting content or interacting. So it's like, we're still very much a part of it. We hear what people hear. We're interacting with people. So our voice is still there. And yeah, it's just, that's all feels like it matters so much because it just, it feels different. It feels like we're authentic and you can just hear the difference in some other entities. Like it's just their social media person is there and they can't really speak on behalf of the organization, or it's just kind of disconnected or it's a little just like, surface level, and we're just much more like ingrained in everything, and we want it to be so much more authentic.
Yeah, if there's a problem, like we hear about it, like you know, so like we pay attention to all those things, and we want to fix everything, and I mean, we touch everything.
Yeah, you guys touched on something that I've noticed about like you and ARC. I'm big on Twitter, and like your voice on Twitter, both of you speak as if you are the company as a person.
Yeah.
Like it's always like, I am doing this. And I think that's really cool because to some degree that could, like, for some people that could come off as kind of weird, but it doesn't for you because it comes off very authentic. It comes off as if it's the same person talking all of the time. And the person is Seismic Dance Event, or the person is Real Music Events. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to just like throw that out there. Like, having an authentic social media voice is something that's super important. You guys have managed to like pull that off quite well.
No, thank you. Yeah, the Seismic Twitter thing is like definitely something that I've just wanted to keep the way it is. Cause I'm like, I want it to be authentic. And I think people super appreciate that, you know, especially coming out of the pandemic and all that stuff is when I really realized like just keep it authentic and keep it like real, you know? And that's kind of what we, you know, Real Music Events and everything has always been like, let's keep it real. You know?
There's, that's one of our slogans, keeping it real. Yep. But there have definitely been like arguments over like, how real we're being. Yeah. Like how spicy on Twitter, it's like rarely me. Like it's either Andrew or Dana on our team.
I can tell.
Yeah. On Instagram, like that's where I will be popping in. And Facebook is actually both of us and our team member. So like people have joked and like in our community here that they like to play the guessing game of, is it Andrew or is it Kelly? Or now is it Dana? So, but it keeps it fun. And like, we like to be a part of it. And when we get really busy and we're like not as in it during certain periods of time. When we get back into things, I'm like, oh, feels like nice.
Yeah.
You know, like after Seismic, a lot of times after like the festival, like I'll be doing a lot of like the reshares, and so I get to see the patrons' content, and like that's always really cool and special to like see it from everyone else's perspective and how much fun they had, and I just feel connected all over again. So it's really important to us to like be able to do that and pop in and be a part of that.
Yeah.
I love it. I always like to end on this question. It's literally been my closing question for interviews for like the last 7 years. Mm-hmm. But what excites you about the future of dance music?
I mean, I can just start off by saying like it's crazy from where we started to where it is today. Like it's just, I mean, honestly, like when I sit and think about how mind-blowingly big dance music has gotten and it's still growing, like it's just some of these artists that we've been booking, like they're, I mean, it's just, they're selling more tickets than, you know, bands and hip hop artists and all, like they've become the new thing.
The new rock star.
Yeah.
And the new rock stars
to me is really great that dance music is still growing. Cause I can tell just based on like ticket sales and stuff like that, like it still is growing, which is just awesome. You know, I think it's just, I mean, I never would have thought that it would have gotten to where it is today, for sure. And so that's exciting to me.
I love that.
And like the future of dance music, I mean, I feel like we're already like the future is now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, before it always felt like we were laying like the groundwork to get to somewhere that we knew it was going, but we just didn't know what that was.
Yeah.
But I feel like now we're kind of in that era. And it's like starting to breathe and like expand. So like even us getting to where we are with Seismic and having our venue open, the Concourse Project, like that feels like this era.
Yeah.
And we always like to say like sometimes you just take a step back and you're like, it's crazy that we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
But it's been a natural evolution. But if no, like, do we ever like know exactly that this is what it would be? Like, we couldn't have said that.
Definitely not.
But like, we're also not satisfied. Like, I mean, we're satisfied, but we're not done. And like, it's always like, okay, I've got more ideas. And
what can we do better?
What can we do better or cooler or get more interesting? And like, you know, the bigger we get in certain ways, like the cooler things we can do and provide. And it's like doing cooler and cooler production is something that really excites me. For him, it's like, okay, you're already regularly selling out the Concourse Project. That's a 2K cap. Like the next thing is having to have like bigger outdoor events or other, like even a bigger space, like cool concerts, you know, and is that at our space on the outside portion or is that somewhere else? You know, like there's so many ideas and things that we have that are like what remain ahead, and just continuing to do that and just follow that path is something that's exciting.
Definitely want to just keep growing with the scene, which, you know, kind of just been doing, you know.
I love it. Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time out to speak to me today. This has been like so much fun, and congratulations on all your success. And again, I have to tell you, last year Seismic was one of my favorite festival experiences of the year. Like, it totally brought me back to like my early days of raving. And as old as I am, that's a hard thing to do. So
see, the real ones get it.
Yeah.
Right.
It's definitely like, even when we talk about the Concourse Project, we're like, it's like a warehouse, which, you know, when I first started going to, I was going to warehouses, but it's a warehouse with dope production. So it's like, you get the old school vibe, but with like
new shiny tools.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh yeah. It was like the perfect amount of bright and shiny stuff to look at. I loved it.
Yeah. Well, we hope to see you again. I hope you can make out to Seismic Spring. It's next weekend. I don't know if you already have plans to, but you should come on down.
For fall.
I'm going to a festival with my family this weekend, actually. My kid, my 11-year-old, and my wife and our friends, we're doing like a Burning Man like side thing. But I definitely want to come out this November.
Because
I would like to bring my wife with me because it was just so much fun. Like honestly, I'm not shitting you. It was my favorite festival of last year.
It was awesome. So special. That was a great.
It was really, really good. Yeah. I mean,
it was good. Cascade in the Rain.
It was so good. I was like envisioning it. Just like,
yeah. And I'm from San Francisco. So that's like super nostalgic for me. Like just to see Cascade, like see how far he's come. Cause he was playing like 200 cap venues in San Francisco in the early 2000s. So to see him play like In the Rain at that kind of event was.
Yeah. It was such a vibe. We'll be right back.